top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show, because I know you had a great weekend, so we're back in action now, and I know you have a lot to say, especially after the big verdict last week, the president speaking again over the weekend, you big UFC event over the weekend, 18,000 people, standing ovation, thunderous applause. This hour, we're going to be joined by Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina, Oversight and Armed Services Committee. Big push to rearm our military. How about that? To get above the 1929 level we're now spending at. It's unacceptable. And of course, we'll take your calls. We're also watching, didn't make the big three, but what's happened with Anthony Fauci's trial. He's going to be on Capitol Hill for the first time, stunningly, even though the House has been in Republican hands for 2 years. He's going to be on Capitol Hill to try to defend some of his actions, and some of which are indefensible during the pandemic. But he's arrogant, and he'll be at all his defense from the Democrats. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
No, this was an Israeli proposal. We have every expectation that if Hamas agrees to the proposal, that Israel would say yes. So Prime Minister Netanyahu's team, in fact, his foreign minister, again, just said that they welcomed this announcement by the president and that they did, in fact, agree that this was their proposal.
Oh, really? Okay, Admiral, that's good. The Gaza deal being forced down Israel's throat by Joe Biden. We look at the framework, the three phases they proposed and how it benefits Hamas.
Number two.
The proceedings begin less than a year after a plea agreement fell apart that would have averted this trial. Hunter Biden has always been open about his battles with substance abuse. But this trial is going to put some graphic details out there in open court.
As if the laptop didn't do it enough. Yeah, and it will be key to this evidence. Hunter is in a ton of trouble as jury selection begins in his gun trial, and his tax case out in California awaits. How that laptop is suddenly back in the news. We're going to take a look at the stakes.
Number one.
Biden has chosen to make it political. The district attorney chose to make it political. And what's happening? What's happening is we've got an unbelievable United Party. $53 million came in the door.
Yep, they do. Reince Priebus used to run the RNC. The verdict is in. So what's the impact on the Trump sentence on the race? And what are the chances he gets jail in July? We're going to look at the wide range and see what the experts say, too. And I know you have a lot to say about this, and I'll open up the phones and what you say goes. Meanwhile, Eli Honig on CNN, this struck me. He came out and said prosecutors got their man, for now at least, but they have also contorted the law in an unprecedented manner in their quest to snare their prey. That's absolutely true. To me, any clear-thinking person would conclude that, but the polls don't. In a snapshot poll right after the verdict, here's what CBS asked, ABC. Do you think this verdict was correct or not correct? 50% said correct, 25% not correct, 23% didn't know. No cameras. You're really susceptible to the reporting. Do you think Donald Trump should or should not end his presidential campaign because of this verdict? 49% said should end it, 37% should not. 14% don't know. How about this question? Do you think the charges against Trump in this case were politically motivated? 47% said yes, 38% said no. I got some more polls to go over, but just so you know, all the Sunday shows, which I watched every single one, were just loaded with two questions. Will you accept the election results after this election? And will Donald Trump get jail time? And of course, people are out there trying to say you cannot comment on a jury trial and go against what a jury ruled. Really? So you can't go against how a jury ruled if you disagree. It's un-American to speak up. That's what Joe Biden thinks. Cut to.
The jury heard 5 weeks of evidence. 5 weeks. And after careful deliberation, the jury reached a unanimous verdict. They found Donald Trump guilty on all 34 felony counts. Now he'll be given the opportunity, as he should, to appeal that decision just like everyone else has that opportunity. That's how the American system of justice works. And it's reckless, it's dangerous, it's irresponsible for anyone to say this was rigged, just because they don't like the verdict.
Really? Irresponsible. Let me ask you, were you happy with the O.J. trial? Do you think O.J. was really innocent? If I commented on the O.J. jury trial, which exonerated him, am I being un-American? Am I being reckless? People don't agree with this result. I don't agree with the result. People say you can drill down on it and say they had no choice by the evidence they heard and the instructions they got. That's a good argument. But I'm not going to not comment on a jury trial that we've tried for the longest time to get a hold of and fully understand why it was happening and know the predecessor to Alvin Bragg said, I don't think there's any case here, and he doesn't change his mind. You'll hear that later in the show. But no evidence of the White House being involved? John Ratcliffe tackled that. I'll let him answer. I'll let you hear what he said to Maria yesterday. As you know, he was former DNI. Cut five.
They are specific dates. This isn't debatable. These are facts that all of these lawyers in different jurisdictions met with Joe Biden's lawyers shortly before they brought indictments against Joe Biden's political opponent. Maria, that is an overwhelming body of evidence of election interference. It's one thing to deprive Donald Trump of his civil rights under color of law, which is clearly what happened here in this case. But if you attempt to oppress anyone's right to vote, take away anyone's right to vote, as they've done to Donald Trump here, you've committed election interference under Title 18 or Title 52. And, you know, again, the Biden Justice Department isn't going to investigate itself for its complicity here.
Right. But we can continue to point it out. One of the main things is this guy, Matt Colangelo, I know you don't have a million years and a lot of time to go over this. Just know he had the third highest ranking position at the Justice Department. Inexplicably, he resigns to go help Alvin Bragg do this case. It makes no sense. But the direct connections to Letitia James. Why would he do that? That's very similar to leaving the Yankees and going to play single A baseball so you can win a championship in single A. It makes no sense unless you were trying to impress the owner of that team. In this case was Donald Trump because he's in the crosshairs. We'll see. A lot of people don't agree with this. But what's going to happen next I find fascinating because everyone's saying you shouldn't comment on this on the left. You shouldn't insult the jury. All I could tell you is that Donald Trump raised $70 million minimum, mostly in small donations, before 48 hours was done. And then Miriam Adelson decides that she's the widow of Sheldon Adelson, one of the richest people in the world. She's going to put $100 million in form of super PAC just for Donald Trump. And believe it or not, over in Silicon Valley, they're beginning to have fundraisers for Donald Trump. I mean, that's what's happening. This was written up by Axios and Punchbowl. People, instead of running from him, running to him, guess who else is with him? Elon Musk. Now, look, he's not going to win because billionaires like him. But if they could write checks to get the word out to counter Joe Biden's biggest advantage, that matters a lot. Listen to Mark Thiessen. Cut three.
This is ridiculous. Joe Biden said after the Trump verdict, it is reckless, it is dangerous, it is irresponsible for anyone to say this was rigged just because they don't like the verdict. It's the same. Now do the Supreme Court, because that's all the Democrats have been doing about the Supreme Court, is questioning its objectivity, its integrity.
Nonstop, and not just with the road. Every decision they're questioning. Supreme Court, he's got a comment every single day. Remember Senator Schumer, the whirlwind is coming your way, Kavanaugh. That is commenting on decisions that a esteemed court, Supreme Court, has made. So everybody was asking, basically, how dare you criticize, and then we're trying to diminish the chances for appeal. So on July 11th, the president will formally get his sentence, and they're going to immediately appeal it, and then we'll see where it goes. All these legal experts say they're not going to get the appeal in place until after the election. I don't think it's going to be that much of an effect on the election if there are no more trials. If there are more trials, it's going to be tough to take them off for 6 weeks and then let a jury decide who the next president will be. So Will Scharf was brilliant. He's a current Trump attorney, I should say, but he wasn't on this case specifically. He was with George Stephanopoulos yesterday, who despises Trump. Cut four.
The attorney general in Manhattan has nothing to do with the Department of Justice. Finally, what do you expect from the sentencing process?
I vehemently disagree that the district attorney in New York was not politically motivated here, and I vehemently disagree that President Biden and his political allies aren't up to their necks in this prosecution. I think the fact
there's
that
no
the
evidence
Biden
of that, sir. There's no. I'm not going to let you continue to say that. There's just zero evidence of that.
Well, how about the fact that Matthew Colangelo was standing over Alvin Bragg's shoulder when he announced this verdict? I mean, Colangelo was the number three official in the Biden Department of Justice who suddenly disappears and shows up as an assistant district attorney right as Trump's case in New York starts to proceed. You want to talk about political coordination?
This has nothing to do with President Biden. Do you want to answer the question about the sentencing process or not?
See what he does? They don't like it, so they want to make this aside. And Margaret Brennan does this all the time. So they don't like your answer, and they'll say, well, that doesn't make any sense, but I'm going to move on. And I love when guys like Tom Cotton, in this case, Will Sheroff, go back. No. When you let me talk, I will go back to where I left off. That's exactly what you have to do. Because you can't, just because he's a host doesn't mean he gets last word. Don't answer his question until you're allowed to answer his, until allowed to get his counter to what you just said. I love it. So that is the big issue. They want to say that Joe Biden has nothing to do with this. Remember 2022, Politico, President of the United States, Politico article says, very upset at Attorney General Merrick Garland taking too long to prosecute Donald Trump. Dan Abrams, ABC, cut 7.
There's some real appellate issues here that are serious questions about why didn't the defense even know what the charge was that they were going to be applying, what law that was going to be applying.
Which of these three underlying laws?
Exactly. And so there were a lot of questions for the defense going into this, I think, as they were making their closing arguments, not even knowing sort of what the law that they were going to be battling over was. So do I think they're going to win an appeal? I don't know. But there are real legal issues. But we need to separate that from the sort of moral and political questions.
Yeah, moral and political question. Go ahead and do it. JFK obviously has a sensational personal life. They made a myriad of movies about it. FDR openly had a separate relationship other than Eleanor Roosevelt. Bill Clinton basically had to pay Paula Jones $950,000. And we know what he was doing with Monica Lewinsky while Yasser Arafat was waiting in the lobby. Okay, we'll talk about that. He's still the featured guest at every major event and still helped bail out Barack Obama in 2012, when Mitt Romney was gaining on him at the DNC. But talk about appeal. This is what the experts say. On appeal, they could look at Stormy Daniels' testimony. She said way too much on stuff that had nothing to do with this trial and really sullied up the former president. The statute itself, not allowing defense experts, witnesses to second witness the president's immunity. So not allowing the defense expert witness. We know that. To talk about the election law. Also, presidential immunity is an issue. The judge, donated to Democratic causes, as well as to Joe Biden specifically. The fact that this was a novel legal theory in a federal election law in a state case. So there's a lot of different things they can go at, but other experts caution, saying in New York, the appellate very rarely overturns another decision. We will see. I just want to bring this up here as non-lawyers, like most of the audience is. This is what they're saying about this case. And instinctively, you know, this case has done nothing in the short term than fortify the Republicans. And I'll take a break after this. Susan Collins says, I'm not even sure I can vote for Trump. She says this trial is a sham. Mitt Romney, few Republicans hate outside Liz Cheney, Trump as much as Mitt Romney. He says this case never should have been brought. If there was a problem, there should have been a deal done. No trial. Mitch McConnell, case never should have been brought. That's what I'm talking about. A unified party was not there after the Access Hollywood tape, was not on board with Donald Trump. They couldn't figure out what he was going to do, who people were around him, who would ever want to run with him. Now you have 7 or 8 people auditioning every weekend. Great people. Rubio, Cotton, Kelly, Senator Scott, as well as Doug Burgum, every weekend. Elise Stefanik, every weekend, essentially auditioning to be the number two. Almost everyone will be in the cabinet if they want it. When we come back, I'll take your calls. I see if the first 5 lines are filled already, and then Congressman Nancy Mace at the bottom of the hour, and we'll keep you up to date on what's happening with the Hunter Biden trial, as well as the Fauci testimony. You are listening to a very busy Brian Kilmeade show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Out of the gates and ready to go. Hey, it's Hutton Withrow. Hot Mike is here on the Outkick Network. We've got your afternoon covered with the latest sports discussion, and it's available wherever you find your audio.
Daily analysis and news. He is hot. I am Mike. Actually, my name is Chad. His name is Jonathan. But you get the picture. We're going to bring it every single day. Whatever you want to call us, we'll respond to. We just want you to respond to what we're dishing out every day.
And while you're here, we hope you subscribe to the podcast. Like, subscribe, and share.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you agree with that, that it would be difficult or nearly impossible for the law enforcement institutions to put him in actual jail?
No. They would just put him in a double wide somewhere out near the fence, out in the grass. And he would eat there, he'd shower there, he'd exercise there, he'd be away, as Donya Perry said, from general population. But it's obviously doable.
That's James Comey, a useless clown who I hope never to hear from again. But now he wrote a novel, so people are interviewing him. And I know he timed it perfect, so we talk about the election and how evil Donald Trump is and how great a guy he is. But no one's buying it now. Everybody hates him. I think Hillary Clinton's people hate him as much as as much as the Donald Trump people hate him. But he's talking about, can you put this president in jail? And he says it's definitely doable. And the problem that they say, experts say, is that Donald Trump is not admitting guilt, and he never will. Usually you go to your probation officer, and they evaluate and make an evaluation to the judge. And then, of course, the prosecution makes a recommendation to the judge. And the president's going to go behind closed doors in some grimy office, underfunded, even though you got a ton of tax money, and you go in there, and the president's going to just state his case, at which time he's going to say, I didn't do anything wrong. And evidently, that's going to work against him. And will it work against him to the point, along with him insulting the judge, that they try to put him in jail? It'll be really egregious. It'll be insane for them to do that, especially knowing that they're going to appeal and how many questions and unprecedented this case was. But that indeed could happen. And he's not the only one who's saying it could happen. Cy Vance says it's not likely. Why would I play Cy Vance for you? I play it for this reason. I play it because he had the chance. He had the job before Alvin Bragg had the job as a former Manhattan DA for a long time. And he said, I was not going to charge him. And here's what he said. Cut 12.
Well, I think, of course, it weighs into the decision because of the significance of a decision to charge a sitting president. But ultimately, we did pursue those charges that we felt were appropriate and which were backed up by the evidence and which were significant. In the first indictment, it was systemic tax fraud and double bookkeeping in his company. And that's what we felt the charges should be. And that's where we unfortunately ran out of time. At the end of my administration, and then D.A. Bragg took over. He redirected the efforts of the office.
And he did. And guess what? He got his trial, and then we waited a year of costs of at least $2 million. I think it's more like $5 million between the security and the traffic tie-ups and all the other diversion of events. Think about all the other cases that are not tried because of it. Think about what's going on in this city. I just told you an hour ago, we just got this story an hour ago that this illegal Venezuelan immigrant just shot a cop, two cops. You have all this stuff. We have these illegal immigrants destroying hotels, great violence, assaulting, shoplifting. Nobody gets charged, but you go after a 77-year-old former president.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
He said, quote, regardless of the result, I urge all Americans to respect the verdict and the legal process. That is not the Republican Party line at the moment. And in fact, he was attacked by the top Trump advisor, Chris LaCivita, who wrote that he, quote, just ended your campaign, end quote. Does the Republican National Committee support Larry Hogan for Senate?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I don't support what he just said there. I think it's ridiculous. And I think anybody who's not speaking up in the face of really something that should never again have seen the light of day at trial, that would never have been brought against any other person aside from Donald Trump.
But does the RNC support his bid?
The respect of anyone.
Well, he doesn't deserve the respect of anyone?
He doesn't deserve the respect of anyone in the Republican Party at this point. And quite frankly, anybody in America, if that's the way you feel, that's very upsetting to hear that.
So are you willing to cede the Senate seat in Maryland to the Democratic Party and not support Larry Hogan?
What I'll tell you is that we, of course, want to win as a party. But that is a shame. And I think he should have thought long and hard before he said that publicly.
Are you willing to use Republican Party resources to support his bid or not? It sounds like you're saying you're not.
Well, I'll get back to you on all the specifics monetarily. But what I can tell you is that as the Republican Party co-chair, I think he should never have said something like that. I think that's ridiculous.
Oh, that is Lara Trump running the RNC, as you know, the co-chair, saying that Larry Hogan came out and basically said, respect the decision of the jury. Chris LaCivita ripped him, and you see Larry Trump doing basically the same thing. I think it's crazy. The Republican Party needs moderates, Republicans, conservatives, whatever, in order to get the majority in the Senate. If they don't get the majority in the Senate this time, almost no one believes they're going to get it for at least another 12 years, because nothing in terms of the map lines up for them to flip some of these seats. Congresswoman Nancy Mace joins us now, Oversight and Armed Services Committee. Congresswoman, welcome. Welcome back. Your thoughts about Larry Hogan and some of the blowback he's received from putting out that tweet?
Well, number one, I represent a very purple district. About 40% of my voters are independent voters. And what we need today is we want to make sure that everybody comes back to the Republican Party, because we can't have four more years of Joe Biden. And I try to communicate directly with independent voters and have them understand why this race is so important, this election is so important, why it's so important to elect Donald Trump. I'm disappointed in Larry Hogan's comments, but I still want Larry Hogan in the party. I think it's really important that we have lots of different diverse voices within the party, because we have a country to save right now. I vehemently disagree with Larry Hogan's interpretation of the court. It was not Alvin Bragg didn't have the jurisdiction. The guy literally ran on campaigning to put Donald Trump in prison. He made good on that promise. You looked at the liberal judge, the liberal prosecutor, the liberal jury. I think Donald Trump would have had a more fair trial if he had mugged an old lady on a New York subway and looted Lululemon's on the way home. But that's not what happened. He'll appeal it, and I think it could go to the highest court in the land. And I think he will be exonerated and all of that down the road. And they're trying to do whatever they can to keep Donald Trump out of the presidency. So I'm disappointed in Larry Hogan's comments, but also we need all the independent voters as possible for November. We got to win it all. Now, there's a lot at stake.
I do think, but don't they realize that? Doesn't Chris LaCivita know that if the president becomes president without getting the Senate, he's going to be hamstrung on almost every issue?
We don't want, clearly we don't want him hamstrung. I mean, we've got a very slim majority right now in the House. I'm working really hard. I have the most expensive Republican primary in South Carolina history a week from tomorrow on June 11th. I've got guys like Kevin McCarthy spending millions, to the tune of $6 million right now. And as soon as I get through this election, I'm going to be focused on swing districts, swing states, hearing the message of how do we win over independent voters, how do we win back women in these purple places, because we have to get a stronger majority in the House, we have to flip the Senate, and we don't have a choice, get Donald Trump back in the White House.
So, Kevin McCarthy, because you voted to oust him, right?
Correct.
Do you regret that?
I voted, yeah. I don't, because, I've been in D.C. for 3 years now. The place is corrupt. There is an enormous lack of honesty and integrity. And I'm the first woman to graduate from the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. Integrity matters. And I don't agree with Mike Johnson on everything, but we can all agree he's a man who can be trusted. You couldn't trust Kevin McCarthy. He didn't have that kind of honesty and integrity. And even though I don't agree with leadership all the time, I trust Mike Johnson to tell me the truth. And so far he has. And he's accessible. And he's very supportive and helpful. And when I get through this 8 days from now, my focus is going to be ensuring, because I have kind of an independent voice. I'm fiscally conservative, but I march to the beat of my own drum. I'm a suburban woman, a suburban mom. I want to make sure that we can win back as many of these independent-minded thinkers as humanly possible, because that is what's going to get Donald Trump over the finish line in November.
So there's a the other thing to bring up, I think, is important, too, is that with this whole verdict, it doesn't seem to be anybody dissenting. I mean, you have Mitt Romney, who said this never should have been brought. Mitch McConnell said this case has never been brought. What are your constituents telling you?
Well, it's interesting. Obviously, I've got 40% independent-minded voters in my district, 32% Republican, 28% Democrat. I'm very purple. But one of the first calls I got on Thursday night within an hour of the verdict coming down was from a centrist, right of center, and they're like, this is a kangaroo court. Their words, not mine. And I think when you see the sort of lawfare that's been happening, you see the two-tiered system of justice is really injustice. People, conservatives are obviously rallying around Trump. But interestingly, on that first night when that $34 million was raised, almost a third of those donors were entirely new donors. And I think it's starting to rally around the independent crowd, the right of center crowd, maybe even totally centrists and moderates. I think you're starting to start to see them come around, and we need them. We need them in the party. We need them on election day. We need them to say, don't always disagree. Don't have to always disagree with Trump. Agree with Trump on everything. But look, the world was safer. Hamas wasn't invading Israel. The Houthis weren't bombing U.S. military targets in the Middle East. Russia wasn't invading Ukraine. We didn't have 9 million people crossing the border. Wages and prosperity and economic freedom were better, all under Trump. And so we have to get that message out, and work. We have to work double time, because Joe Biden and the mainstream media are trying to tip the scales with activist judges, prosecutors that are political consultants to the DNC. We have court systems in different states literally throwing Trump off the ballot, and the Supreme Court had to intervene. But all of the scales are weighed against us right now. And if we can rally the moderates and independents and centrists over this verdict, and I see that happening now, continue that, then it's going to be a landslide in November. But it's going to take a lot of work.
So the border, the president's going to announce executive orders at the border as soon as tomorrow. And at which time Speaker Johnson was asked, is this the executive action you've been urging him to take? Are you happy now? Cut 37.
It's too little, too late. Now he's trying to desperately show the American people somehow that he wants to address the issue that he himself created. We documented 64 specific executive actions that President Biden and Secretary Mayorkas at DHS took over the course of the last 3.5 years, beginning on the first day that President Biden took office to open the border wide. They did it intentionally, and it has had catastrophic effects upon our country that we'll be living with for decades to come. And now he wants to issue some sort of executive order, I guess, to show that, oh, no, he really does care about the issue. The only reason he's doing that is because the polls say that it's the biggest issue in America.
So what are you going to be looking for, and do you feel the same way?
I want to know which Donald Trump policies Joe Biden's going to reinstate. That's the number one thing I'm going to be looking for when these executive orders come down. This is just another way for Joe Biden to buy votes. He's paying lip service to border security just like he paid lip service to Israel when Hamas invaded. This guy doesn't mean a word that he says. And if he would just take Donald Trump's Title 42 and Remain in Mexico policies, just those two policies, and reinstated them today, it would stem the tide of 80% of illegal aliens invading our southern border today. Just those two things. It doesn't have to be complicated. It can be real simple. And the third thing he could do, because he did this on day one, the day he was sworn into office, he literally stopped construction of the wall at our southern border. Let's do that next. Those three things would be enormous to stemming the tide of illegal immigration. And by the way, those are things that Donald Trump led our nation on. So if Joe Biden wants to be more like Donald Trump in terms of border security, I'm going to support it. But the devil is always in the details.
Well, you got two border mayors heading to D.C. for the announcement. It's going to be Edinburgh Mayor Ramiro Garza, as well as another mayor who is from Brownsville Mayor John Cowan, because they're Democratic mayors who actually are in denial that the president's actually doing a good job there. San Diego's falling apart as we speak. And there's a cover of the New York Post today. 350,000 illegal immigrants have their status just without criminal backgrounds, have their court date eliminated. Therefore, they get to stay, but they basically are non-people.
Right. They don't want us to ask if they're citizens on the census. They want these people to vote in our elections. They're doing so legislatively and through the courts. What they are doing is disgusting. And we just had in my district 2 weeks ago a four-month-old infant killed by an illegal alien in South Carolina driving under the influence. Last year in October, it was Maddie Hines, who was a four-year-old toddler killed by another illegal alien on the road. An illegal alien, by the way, deported under Donald Trump, let back in under Joe Biden. They want to destroy the fabric of our nation, and this will be the most consequential election of our lifetime, because if they win in November, they will do it. They will destroy our country and everything our founders believed in, including the freedom of our American citizens, and it'll be taken over by these leftists who want grown men in bathrooms with underage girls in locker rooms, men taking away things from women in their sports and scholarships and athletic opportunities, to all these illegal aliens coming here and benefiting financially from healthcare and education, to those nice little debit cards they get upon arrival. That's what they're doing to our country, and it's going to destroy it.
Well, it's going to be interesting. Primary, it's going to be an election season. How do you stand with President Trump?
I endorsed him for his reelect, and he is wholeheartedly supporting us in my reelection right now. Again, this will be the most expensive Republican primary in South Carolina history a week from tomorrow. If folks want to support us, it's nancymace.org, the D.C. machine, the D.C. establishment, the Kevin McCarthy establishment. They're spending $6 million to try to defeat me a week from tomorrow.
I guess so. We'll see what happens. Congresswoman Nancy Mace, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, I'm going to play more from what's changing about this political landscape. And there's a lot since his verdict, one of which is money, money flowing a different direction. However, what do independents think about this case? We'll give you the numbers. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Not many people were talking about the WNBA. It's been around for 20 years. You know, I remember when Lisa Leslie and Rebecca Lobo and Jen Rosati and all these great players came out after 96 Olympics, where they had a high profile, obviously, and they started WNBA and the ABL, and the ABL collapsed and WNBA got everybody, but it never got anywhere. They just don't promote it. I know ESPN does their draft, and for the most part, you see quality basketball, but you see no interest outside a few markets. And then Caitlin Carr comes out. She sets all types of records in Iowa as a junior, comes back as a senior, almost wins a national championship, loses to South Carolina, undefeated season. And then she goes into the league right away with the worst team. That's the way it goes. They had the first pick. And ever since that time, she's been thoroughly beat up. Now, she's gotten more points early than anybody else in history. She only scored 3 points last night, blown out by the Liberty by 40 points. But what happened the day before against Chicago was unbelievable, with some celebrities in the stands. Caitlin Clark is out. I think she ends up with 12 points. But you really struck at the end when she was just flat out targeted while she was waiting for an inbound pass by this woman, Chedney Carter. Listen to this. Cut 38.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it, but I think it's just like, just respond, come down, let your play do the talking. It is what it is. It's a physical game. Go make the free throw and then execute on offense. And I feel like that's kind of what we did. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it was a takedown. And afterwards, she was waiting for the ball, just knocked down. No reason for it. It was changed from a foul to a flagrant foul. But the game is over. They did get one of the rare things they did. It's going their second win of the year. She was asked about it afterwards. And, of course, nobody was around to talk about it. Cut 39.
Kenny, on the play before bumping in with Caitlin, it seemed like she turned to you a little bit after the fever score.
I answered no Caitlin Clark questions.
Did she say anything to you?
I don't know what she said.
What'd you say to her?
I didn't say anything.
That's enough. And they just cut it off. They finally have some interest in the WNBA. And I don't even care. I know when it comes to fights, the best thing you could do is say you have a real feud with the person. Ali, Frazier, Conor McGregor, and everybody. So when you think there's real bad blood between the two, I love it. Caitlin Clark having a hard time. You know, the girl, every freshman, every rookie has a hard time, especially in these big time leagues. But she's playing pretty good. She's got to adjust to a lot more talent. And I think these people in the league should realize, give her a hard time, but be respectful. Number one, she's bringing a lot of attention to your league. She's going to bring more money to your league, more eyeballs to your league. If you're a great person, a great player, people are going to notice you because you're playing against her. Why don't they realize this? I'll give you another example. Jim Brown was the best running back ever, 9 years in the league. Sam Huff realized that. I think he was the Giants and Redskins. And he used to have reporters come up to him all the time. He's a linebacker. And say, I'm the only one that can stop Jim Brown. I'm the only one. We've had a rivalry for years. Jim Brown, you say, what is he talking about? I don't even know who he is, or I know who he is, but he's not even the best player on their team. But Sam Huff made himself famous by being a Jim Brown stopper, which he never actually did, as great a player as he was. But he created the rivalry, created interest, created put more people in the stands. It's a old technique. I wish people in the NBA would talk to the players and say, she's bringing more money, more sponsorships, selling more tickets. It's good for everybody. Here's Charles Barkley, cut 40.
You women out there, y'all petty, man. Hey, LeBron, you are 100% right on these girls hating on Caitlin Clark. Y'all petty, girls. I expect men to be petty because we're the most insecure group in the world.
Oh, you are.
Y'all should be thanking that girl for getting y'all ass private charters, all the money and visibility she bring into the WNBA. Don't be petty like dudes. Listen, what she's accomplished, give her her flowers. Stop being petty, all you women out there. She got y'all ass charters. She bringing all y'all this money to the table, but y'all being petty like dudes. Y'all girls, stop being petty. Caitlin Clark, thank you for bringing all that money and shine to the WNBA.
There you go. Is he wrong?
He's absolutely right. And by Caitlin Clark, you know, taking the high road every time, it just is doing her and the WNBA more favors.
I remember when Michael Jordan came to the league, started lighting it up, they started beating him up. Detroit were the champions at the time. They would beat him up because at that time, the Bulls really didn't have much around him. So he was a one-man highlight reel. So they tried to beat him up every time he touched the ball. It's not unusual. But this type of resentment is. Resentment? That was an established league that he came into, and they had Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They were established. This league has not established, whether you like it or not, nobody talks about the WNBA. Most little girls watch the NBA. That could change with this young woman. I wish they would snap out of it. And where are her teammates? Guys, ladies, you have to jump to her defense immediately. I mean, in hockey, there'd be a brawl for 20 years. They would still be fighting. But they also got to get better. I cannot believe I just ended this hour talking about the WNBA. The latest on the Fauci testimony. We'll give you the latest on the Hunter Biden trial and jury selection. Don't move.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, where it was just blocks away. There was a big Israeli parade in support of that country and for Jews in New York City and around the world. That was great, even though there was some disruptions. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action now in the Northeast. The weather's fine, but it's not great everywhere, I understand. There's a lot going on. A few plates in the air, one of which is Anthony Fauci, for the first time in 2 years, is going to testify. Now that he's retired, in front of the Oversight Committee looking into the pandemic, led by Brad Winstrup, who's a congressman and a doctor, helped save Steve Scalise's life after he was shot on that baseball field. Also, we're looking at Hunter Biden in this jury selection today. So this hour, we're going to be joined by Michael Goodwin, who spent the weekend talking to President Trump, and also going to talk to Congressman Michael Waltz on what a bad deal Joe Biden's proposing that Israel take. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
No, this was an Israeli proposal. We have every expectation that if Hamas agrees to the proposal, that Israel would say yes. So Prime Minister Netanyahu's team, in fact, his foreign minister, again, just said that they welcomed this announcement by the president and that they did, in fact, agree that this was their proposal.
Yeah, it was not. Gaza deal being forced down Israel's throat by Joe Biden. We look at the framework and how it benefits Hamas.
Number two.
The proceedings begin less than a year after a plea agreement fell apart that would have averted this trial. Hunter Biden has always been open about his battles with substance abuse. But this trial is going to put some graphic details out there in open court.
Let alone the tax trial that he's going to have over in California. Hunter is in a ton of trouble as jury selection begins in his gun trial and his tax case awaits in California. How the laptop is suddenly back in the news. We'll look at the stakes.
Number one.
Biden has chosen to make it political. The district attorney chose to make it political. And what's happening? What's happening is we've got an unbelievable United Party. $53 million came in the door.
Yep, that's Reince Priebus. The verdict is in. What's the impact now of the Trump sentence on the race? And what are the chances he gets jail in July? And a large range of experts will weigh in. But first, we'll go to Michael Goodwin. Michael Goodwin, fascinating to see Brad Winstrup just open up fire in a subtle way on Anthony Fauci and all the things that he was saying then that he's not saying now. Like, for example, Michael, you know, the 6 feet apart thing? Don't know where that came from. I just said it every day, and it kept schools closed. And by the way, it does turn out it did hurt school kids learning. We knew that the whole time. Your thoughts about what's taking place today?
Well, good morning, Brian. Look, I think the 6 feet issue is a real metaphor for how many things were simply made up.
Yep.
And thrown out there under the guise of it's science. You know, follow the science. What, you don't trust the science? I mean, you don't trust the scientists? What can we do for you? That attitude, you know, shut down any kind of debate, any discussion, and it's a little bit like the Wizard of Oz, right? You pull back the curtain, and there's no Oz there. There's just an ordinary person. Well, in this case, you pull back the curtain. There's no science. There's just a gossip kind of thing that makes its way around. And, oh, yeah, that sounds good. And the reason it was so important for schools was that they didn't have enough space, enough classroom space, if they really kept every student 6 feet away. So a classroom that might have had 30 or 35 children in it suddenly could only hold maybe 20. Well, what do you do with the other kids? You need another classroom. You need another teacher. They didn't all have the facilities or the ability to even do that. And so that was one of the factors that led to the closing of schools. And even now, you go into retail outlets or whatever, and you'll see that 6 feet thing still marked on the floor, right? They put some kind of adhesive on footprints or something to show you how far apart you should be. I was in one over the weekend, and I had to laugh. But it's not funny. They imposed this as though it was science. And Brian, this is something that is not, unfortunately, limited to just the COVID situation. This government authority now has been totally eroded by things like this, by all of the issues that we've seen around President Trump, of course. This sense that when the government speaks, we no longer take it at face value. And I say we, and I mean millions upon millions of Americans. Certainly some probably do. But I don't know anybody anymore who says, oh, the government said it must be true. I mean,
yeah.
This has become one of the three great lies. And whenever the government speaks now, there's always a doubt about what's the motivation.
Because what bothers me most is the arrogance. It's not that you got it wrong, but the arrogance, the way they shadow ban people that use ivermectin or ridicule people if they come up with something that they didn't subscribe to, or people who are hesitant on the vaccine. And that came from the White House as just behind Afghanistan. I'll always hold President Biden responsible for the division in this country when it came to that vaccine. Nobody could do as much damage as he did. Then he embarrassed us on the world stage. By the way, he left that 20-year war and all those people that fought there. So we'll see what comes out. Fauci has a way of slipping through, not taking responsibility, coming off likable, and it'll be propped up by every Democrat on that committee. So we'll see where that goes. You talked to President Trump over the weekend. Your thoughts?
Well, look, we spoke Friday morning before he made his public statement about the case. And look, I was shocked, Brian, at how calm he seemed and how kind of business as usual he was taking this. I mean, he's not in denial about what has happened, but I think it certainly isn't sending him over the edge either. And to me, this is a remarkable ability to hold fast what you believe and what you say, and not to be blown off course by what was an outrageous case. I mean, I think we agree it never should have been brought. The judge's instructions, the judge's rulings were all tipped in favor of the prosecutor. I mean, if you have to go to that far, if you have to kind of fix everything so that the other side doesn't have a chance, you don't have a very good case. And back to our earlier point about science, this is government overreach. This is government dictates right. taking over what should be a fair process. And again, it just calls into doubt all of the government authority. This is how people, this is how revolutions happen, when people no longer trust the authority. And they are building resentment in this country over things like this. But this has been going on for years now, and we see no pulling back. As you say, when Fauci comes, the Democrats will use their 5 minutes to distract and to denounce the Republicans as though there's no issue. And so for people who know there is an issue, what choice do they have but to come and distrust their government and to speak against it? And then, of course, you're likely to get an FBI knock on the door at one of these points if you're loud enough long enough. So we're really in a bind here as a country. And Donald Trump, I think, is right when he says it's not just me, it's you. That is the point, that they're not just trying to shut him up. They're trying to shut everybody up who disagrees with them.
So they
That's
asked,
what the transgender movement is about. It's so, like, if you don't agree, you're anti-trans. No. I just don't agree with your policy. I don't agree with your medicine. What, no, you're anti-trans? No. I mean, so there's no room for disagreement now in this regime. And that is a real, to me, worrisome sign that this country is going to continue to tear itself apart.
They asked him, they did a poll on ABC. They said, do you think the verdict was correct or not correct? 50% said it was correct. 25% said not correct. 23% said they didn't know. On CBS, they did a poll. They said 57% said they got the verdict right. 43% said they got it wrong. 56% say it was a fair trial. 86% of those were Dems. 56% were independents. That matters. And 82%. The Republicans overwhelmingly thought they got it wrong. I think 4% thought they got it right. So fit to be president, 40% said yes, 51% said no. That's basically his approval rating. Should he serve prison time? 45% said no, 38% said yes. Do you think that this judge, being that he's not going to apologize, he's not going to admit his guilt, he's been ripping the judge every day, do you think this judge gives him jail time?
I think he wants to. I would suspect, Brian, that he's not going to do this alone. This is something that he will, I believe, discuss within the Democratic Party, because he's a Democrat, the legislature is a Democrat, all the judges on the Court of Appeals, New York's top court, they're all appointed by Democrats. So it's a pretty tight circle. I think he will do this under the guidance, privately, of course, because it would be improper. But I think he will be running this up the flagpole to see whether it would be upheld. And I think that's the real issue ultimately in New York. I mean, you have these three Trump cases. The defamation case for a woman who can't remember what year his alleged assault took place.
She's a whack job. Do you see some of her postings?
What's that?
She seems like a whack job. Jean Carroll, you see some of her postings?
Yes.
She's in the woods painting trees and rocks.
And she may sue him again. Every time he expresses doubts and says he didn't know her and never met her, except in some group setting, she sues him again. And her lawyer's talking about a third suit. So all of these things, I think, you have to see them as a whole. The civil fraud case brought by the corrupt attorney general. All of these things must be seen as a complete picture of three trials in New York, all of whom overseen by judges who are tilting toward the plaintiff or the prosecutor and who all hate Donald Trump. So I think the short answer to your question, probably there will be some jail time attached to this case.
Can you imagine that? Jail time while he runs for president with the convention the next week. You think people are outraged now? This would be absolutely insanity. Here's what Cy Vance said, the former Manhattan DA that was replaced by Alvin Bragg, that would not have brought this case. Cut 20.
If you ask me, do I think the court will impose jail in this case? As I said to you, I think yesterday, I think not, but ultimately that's Judge Merchan's decision. The president has made this a little more complicated by having been found in contempt 10 times during the court. But I think that with the proximity of the Republican convention 4 days after his sentencing, and then if he is the candidate for the Republican Party, the proximity of the election, I would be surprised that he would be sentenced to any imprisonment.
So having said all that, that's what he says, and nobody thinks he's a Republican.
No. And, you know, as you pointed out, he turned down this case after trying mightily to do it. I mean, he was the first woke prosecutor in New York, said a whole lot of quality of life crimes that New York had been prosecuted. He refused to prosecute them, such as fare beating, which has now led to an epidemic of fare beating, costing the New York City Transit Authority $750 million a year because people don't pay their fares. But so for Cy Vance to say, oh, well, I'm not, you know, I don't think there should be, he says, I don't think he will. I don't know if what Vance himself would recommend, but he said he doesn't think the judge will give it. I think it's important also, what will the prosecution ask for? Because that will come first. That will give the judge, you know, some ammunition either way. And because he's such a pro prosecutor, of course, in this case, in the ordinary run of things, you know, if you shoplift, if you terrorize somebody, you beat up somebody in the street, we'll waive that. But in this one, oh, he's a Republican, huh? So look, I think there's so much bias in the New York political and court system right now, Brian, that anything goes.
And, you know, by the way, there's two cops who were shot today by a Venezuelan illegal immigrant right in New York City. So it doesn't stop. This is their thing. They are letting their criminals. For people who say that Donald Trump is being anti-Hispanic, no, they are sending their criminals. Do you understand that? He's not even being hyperbolic. They're sending their worst. And we don't prosecute him when we finally get him. And lastly, in terms of whether he was, whether he'll see jail time. James Comey weighed in. Cut 21.
Do you agree with that? That it would be difficult or nearly impossible for the law enforcement institutions to put him in actual jail?
No, they would just put him in a double wide somewhere out near the fence, out in the grass, and he would eat there, he'd shower there, he'd exercise there, he'd be away, as Danya Perry said, from general population. But it's obviously doable.
You think they would put him in a double wide?
Look, Comey, I mean, I saw Comey recently rallying the troops for Joe Biden. It's essential. This is the deep state. James Comey was a corrupt FBI leader and part of the deep state that tried to bring down President Trump. So why he still has any credibility is beyond me, Brian. But this is what we were talking about in the beginning. This is what those who don't agree with this regime are up against. It's everywhere. There are all these people who profited from this system and who will do anything to perpetuate it, including locking up the opposition because he's too inconvenient.
Understood. Michael, thanks so much. Go read his column about his interview with Donald Trump in the New York Post. Thanks, Michael.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
All right. When we come back, your calls. And then Congressman Michael Waltz will also bring you the latest from Anthony Fauci. He has not had a chance to speak. Both sides, one praising him, one ripping him. Right now, the Democrats are praising him.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
You know, I think for the president, there's a time and a place for each argument. I think on the day of the conviction, the day thereafter, I can understand the president staying above the fray and demonstrating his respect and expressing his respect for the jury system. But I think the president should be leaning into this going forward. His competitor is a convicted felon. And you can only imagine if the situation was reversed, they would be going after Joe Biden with a vengeance.
So the Adam Schiff says, okay, put caution to the wind, just go after the court case, knowing that if Joe Biden goes after the court case and says, yeah, convicted felon, when there's already so many tangible ties from him, his White House, his party, to the case to begin with, of course, Alvin Bragg's meeting in the White House, of course, the fact that the previous presidential didn't bring anything up, the fact that Matt Colangelo ran the case, who left the Justice Department to do it, that has everything to do with this. And the fact is, this guy ran about stopping Donald Trump and made it a federal case in order to find a way to get past the statute of limitations that had run out on all these charges, none of which should be criminal. Congressman Michael Waltz will be next. Good, Adam Schiff, that's great advice. Just try to win that Senate seat. My hope is Steve Garvey picks it up and knocks you out of Washington altogether. The most unlikable person you'll ever meet or hear from, Adam Schiff. No one will ever beat you at that. You are a true champion. Don't move. Michael Waltz next.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
No, this was an Israeli proposal. We have every expectation that if Hamas agrees to the proposal, as was transmitted to them, an Israeli proposal, that Israel would say yes. Again, well, all you get in a yes right now, George, and it's not a small thing, but what you get is the start of phase one. So you get some hostages coming out, initial hostages. You get some calm. You get some more humanitarian assistance, maybe up to 600 trucks. And then the two sides can start talking about phase two. So Prime Minister Netanyahu's team, in fact, his foreign minister, again, just said that they welcome this announcement by the president and that they did, in fact, agree that this was their proposal.
That is Admiral John Kirby talking about what the president proposed, three-phase deal to bring peace and a ceasefire to Gaza, and they want to end it. I think we're also on the hook to pay for the reconstruction of Gaza, if you can believe it or not. I want to expand on this and get Congressman Michael Waltz's take on it. I know he's going to be jumping over in D-Day to commemorate 80 years since that major successful but damaging invasion. He's on Armed Services, Intel, and Foreign Affairs. Congressman, welcome back.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Brian. And we have a seat in the original World War II plane that led the invasion fleet and a parachute waiting on you, buddy. You're welcome. Welcome. Come with us. We're going to have 10 members of Congress jumping for D-Day over Mont Saint-Michel.
Now, how many have served in the military?
Oh, every one of them.
Okay.
Every one of them.
You don't want my first jump to be in Normandy, do you?
We can get you trained up. We can get you trained up.
Okay.
We get a lot of experience.
When are you going over?
You know, we're going over. We'll arrive on the 5th. We'll participate in the official ceremonies on the 6th, and we'll jump on the 7th.
Wow, it's going to be great. I know Dan Crenshaw says he's going as well. So I know you want to. You were really disturbed about the speech the president made. Essentially,
yeah.
Here's the peace agreement. Hamas loves it, and the prime minister blindsided by it. Some people are making some cursory remarks, but the president, the prime minister's right wing says, if you do this, we're leaving the government. What do you stand about this?
Well, you got to love Kirby, that piece you just played. I mean, he really is a talented spinmeister. Hey, what's the big deal? We get some hostages out. You get a little stability. You get a little humanitarian aid. I mean, why doesn't everybody love this? That's not what the president said, Brian. I mean, let's all go back and look at his actual speech. He said all IDF out of all of Gaza. Complete withdrawal of the entire Israeli military, all Palestinians back wherever they want to go. Hamas is obviously still there. He tries to then say, oh, by the way, they're not capable of any more October 7th, trust me. And then for all of that, you get only some of the hostages out in phase one. And the thing that's so disturbing is then he said in phase two, as long as negotiations are ongoing, any kind of talks about anything, then Israel stays out of Gaza. Hamas then obviously is not destroyed. And Brian, it's not so much what he said in the speech, it's what he didn't say. He said nothing about Iran. All roads lead back to Iran, and as long as they're flush with cash, pumping arms and training and resources into Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis, by the way, then this is all just going to all happen all over again. Hamas is going to rebuild itself, and there will be more October 7th. But Biden doesn't care about that. You know what he cares about, Brian? He
election.
Just wants this off the headlines through November because it is chewing him up on his left.
By the way, they get a whole bunch of prisoners out, the Palestinians, out of Israeli jails. They say it's a temporary ceasefire that could lead to a permanent ceasefire, and you've done your job. You've degraded Hamas where they can't hurt you. Okay, they're still sending rockets, number one. Number two, they'll look at it as a total victory for Hamas. Their essential, Sinwar and all his buddies are still alive and making decisions.
Yep, that's right. And where's the justice for everyone killed in Israel? They're just going to rebuild and do it all over again. I mean, when the IDF just went into the Rafah crossing, they found over 20 smuggling tunnels under that site.
To Egypt.
Those are going to be to Egypt, where Iran smuggles in the arms, the explosives, the rockets, and it's still estimated Hamas has anywhere from 15 to 25,000 fighters left, whole battalions left, in addition to their leadership. They're going to rebuild, and they're going to do this all over again, and that Israel cannot stand for that. This is a lousy deal for them, but Biden's trying to jam it on both sides at the same time, and I love how Kirby says, well, this is an Israeli proposal, but then in the next sentence, but Israel's got to accept it.
It's insane, and the thing is, what levers do they have? Evidently, they've already changed the whole battle plan for Rafah. They wanted to go in with two divisions into Rafah and just crush everybody. Now they're going to seal the border first. They're going around the edges and doing targeted raids. How much does that hurt?
Well, it just drags the entire thing out. I mean, at the end of the day, if we want this to stop and we want the suffering to stop, cut off Iran's cash that is fueling all of this with their illicit oil sales to China, of all countries. And number two, let Israel finish Hamas and finish the job. And then where the United States can have a big role is working with the Gulf Arab states so that they rebuild Gaza, not the United States taxpayer, which is what he said, which is what Biden said on phase three, that the U.S. would rebuild Gaza.
No way.
Exactly. That is not going to get through Congress.
And plus, we know the money. Any money we give them, they put together a subterranean terror den. We're not going to do this again.
Yeah. No, and Brian, I mean, this was about as well thought out and about as political as the entire peer announcement, which we cannot. I have a briefing on that later today. And what I want to know is, yes or no, did you, the United States military, brief the White House that the ocean, the sea states, and the weather in the Eastern Med this time of year would not support a pier like that, because we wasted over $300 million. We put our service members in harm's way. One's in critical condition right now, all so that Biden had a talking point in the State of the Union, and again, so he could pander to his left. By the way, whether humanitarian aid comes in from the ocean or from the land, at the end of the day, Hamas seizes it. And of the 16 trucks that went in the first shipment from this pier, Biden's pier, 11 of them were looted. Only 5 made it to the warehouse, and you still have the same problem. Hamas takes over.
So it's pretty insane. They say two of Netanyahu's right-wing coalition allies on Saturday threatened to quit if he goes ahead with the deal. Now we know Benny Gantz is pushing him to come up with, give me a plan of what happens the next day. And I can understand that, you better than me, that as a warfighter, you want to know what the objective is. So they should make it clear what they want. Is it going to be a road right up the middle dividing them? Is it going to be Israeli bases there? How do you make sure Hamas doesn't gain power again? So it would be great to inform the guys that are in there and the women that are in there what the objective is, to see how close they are.
That's all a fair question. Is the IDF going to essentially have to occupy portions of Gaza going forward until you can get whatever this notion of a reformed Palestinian authority from the West Bank. Remember that Hamas violently overthrew years ago, kind of back in there. Do the Gulf Arab states send trainers and kind of peacekeepers? I mean, those are all fair questions to ask, but to basically force Israel to give Hamas a good deal is the exact wrong answer. Mm-hmm. So, and at the end of the day, these right-wing ministers, they're not just saying we're going to quit. They will take Netanyahu's government down.
So I want you to general
if they back out.
Yeah. So if he does, if he listens to Biden, he gets the he still gets his weapons at the same rate that he's supposed to. But if he goes with his right wing to keep his coalition together, he loses Biden. I mean, what else could Joe Biden do? He's already withholding some weaponry. Can he go further?
Well, he could. Remember, they kind of tapped the brakes on it, but then backed away from it. Biden's trying to talk out of both sides of his mouth. You know, he's trying to, and this is all about domestic politics, he's trying to keep Jewish American Democrats from completely walking away from him. And he's also trying to appease the very loud progressive voices, you know, that are blocking highways and blowing up the phone lines at the same time. And you just need to pick what you believe is the right course of action in the best interest of the United States and our greatest ally. Explain it, justify it, and move out. Show some spine and show some leadership. So I don't know what Biden does, because I don't think he knows what he does from day to day as they try to appeal and please everyone, and they're pissing off everyone and putting Israel in a terrible situation.
Congressman Michael Waltz with us. Here's General Frank McKenzie trying to sell a book and trying to rehab his image. Cut 27.
I think that they're a lot closer than they were a few months ago. I still think Hamas political and military leadership exists largely whole. A lot of their combat formations have been destroyed, but I think Hamas has been significantly attrited.
So, but he does not believe that they're down enough to leave. He basically said that. How do you feel about McKenzie coming out and saying that the Doha agreement was wrong as Joe Biden's decision to leave?
Well, you know, look, there's a lot of people that had issues with the Doha agreement, but at the end of the day, it had conditions on the Taliban before a full withdrawal. President Trump's advisors went into him and said the Taliban haven't lived up to their deal. And you know what? At the end of Trump's first administration, we still had special operators. We still had Bagram Air Base. Yeah. We still had the forces in place. So he listened and he had conditionality, as opposed to Biden, who said unconditional, we're out no matter what, and the chaos that ensued. I haven't seen the book, Brian, but it damn well better say publicly what he's told us privately, which is the White House ignored his advice and the Pentagon's advice that he couldn't get an evacuation plan out of the State Department, that they waited too long to start it evacuating. There were all kinds of problems with Blinken and his people over at State. I haven't seen it yet, but I got to tell you, myself and every veteran involved are going to go through the roof if he soft pedals to the Biden administration, because he certainly had very tough words for how they completely mismanaged this debacle. And the military was stuck trying to deal with it in the end. And we have 13 dead, service members and Gold Star families because of it.
Michael, the other thing I want to bring to your attention is what's happening in Ukraine. Now we're giving them permission to hit inside Russia in a limited way. Is that significant? And what's taken so long to get the weapons to the Ukrainians?
Well, and it's just one more half measure. And Brian, you know, we've talked about this. Either give them what they need to win, and oh, by the way, define what victory looks like. Are we talking all of Crimea, all of the Donbass? Hold what you got, you know, and don't let Russia take any more. What? But instead, any questions that we ask of this administration, it's stop asking tough questions, don't be pro-Russian, and by the way, just sign the blank check, which they're going to be asking us for in just a few months before the end of this year, I believe. So it's this kind of too little, too late, half-measure approach. They're doing the same thing in Ukraine as they're doing in Israel, it's why we're now in a stalemate. Why we are in a war of attrition, and why this administration just keeps saying, American taxpayer, dig deeper in your pockets and trust me. Give them what they need to win and let them use it. That's it.
The verdict came down on Thursday. The ramifications are still rippling through the political environment. And when President Trump obviously thinks it's a bad verdict, he thought the whole thing was rigged, and he also believes that Joe Biden was behind it. Listen to Joe Biden's response. Cut two.
The jury heard 5 weeks of evidence. 5 weeks. And after careful deliberation, the jury reached a unanimous verdict. They found Donald Trump guilty on all 34 felony counts. Now he'll be given the opportunity, as he should, to appeal that decision just like everyone else has that opportunity. That's how the American system of justice works. And it's reckless, it's dangerous, it's irresponsible for anyone to say this was rigged just because they don't like the verdict.
What do you think?
You know, I think it's incredibly rich for him, for the Democrats, to say what he just said as Chuck Schumer and half the Democrats in the Capitol stand on the steps of the Supreme Court and trash every ruling that comes out of a lean conservative Supreme Court because they don't like it. I mean, talk about undermining trust and confidence in our judicial system with what they're doing in terms of going after Alito, going after Clarence Thomas, and pulling the rug out of any kind of confidence in the Supreme Court. So they're trying to have it both ways there. I think he's going to eat his words depending on what happens to his son, Hunter Biden, who's going into jury selection right now as we speak. And then finally, Brian, look, this is just going to help President Trump politically. It is helping him politically. Angry voters are motivated voters, and they're motivated donors. And 30% of the new donations have never given to Trump before, and they're small dollar, meaning they have a lot of upside they can give. Good for Trump in the short run, horrible for the country in the long run. Pandora's box has been opened on politicizing DAs and attorney generals to go after the other side. I mean, I've seen this in Africa and Pakistan and other places. I never thought I'd see it here.
And that's what it seems. So we'll see what happens to the other three trials as Donald Trump continues to find out. He'll wait until July 11th to find out if he's going to be going to his own RNC. Your thoughts about him going to jail?
I just can't wrap my mind around it, Brian. I don't not only just the precedent you're setting for the country, how that even works logistically with the Secret Service, what it says to the future of our political system, where you can literally jail not just your chief political opponent, the guy that's ahead of you in the polls. When the party in power weaponizes its power on the other side, you want to talk about threats to democracy. I can't think of one bigger than that.
Thanks so much, Congressman Michael Walz. Good luck with your jump.
Thank you, Airborne.
You got
Thanks,
it.
Brian.
Back at one with your calls, Brian Kilmeade Show. I see you up there.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So it's easy to criticize, but they're really criticizing science because I represent science. You're really attacking not only Dr. Anthony Fauci, you're attacking science.
I'm the bad guy to an entire subset of people because I represent something that is uncomfortable for them. It's called the truth.
Right. Thank you. So if you do not agree with them, you don't like the truth. That's uncomfortable. That's called arrogance, which exactly I picked up on him day one. He's speaking right now, and both sides have been able to, the Democrats rehab him, the Republicans question him, and he just sits there and says, everything I did for everybody else, and I was right the whole time. I didn't make no effort to cover anything up, and gain-of-function research was not going on that he knew of course. So we'll see where that goes. Before I get to calls, just a quick announcement. Indianapolis, Indiana, History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour. Shelton Auditorium, June 29th. Get your tickets now. Also, there's meet and greet opportunities. There's some left. And then at the end of July, July 27th, Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, at the Sherman Theater. It's a night like no other. Steve, real quick, you're listening in Pensacola Beach.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on a Hunter Biden situation. I was charged with 922G3, served a year in federal prison with Comrade Black, who also was, you know, prosecuted. He wrote a great story called The Prosecution.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, you got to call back. It's breaking up. but he's trying to say he sent a year in prison for the same gun charge. So we'll see what this guy gets. Brian Kilmeade. By the way, he put it all in his book on tape, in his book, and then read the book on tape on all this stuff. It's going to be impossible to beat. Why this guy hasn't cut a deal makes absolutely no sense. It's going to get even more embarrassing for him. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. A lot going on. A lot of plates in the air. Anthony Fauci answering some friendly questions from Democrats and hostile questions from Republicans by saying, I've done everything right all the time. Stop bothering me. And I have no idea why Democrats feel as though they got to prop him up. I mean, the pandemic started during Trump years. You could at least blame Trump for that and then say Anthony Fauci misled. But then when he comes front and center, so many of his decisions fell flat on their face and cost America a huge learning curve and so much of our economy. We're going to be joined by Josh Krasauer in a moment and Chris Rufo at the bottom of the hour. But first things first, as we wait on that, and we also see the testimony has begun, or the evaluation has begun on a jury trial for Hunter Biden. A lot going on today. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
No, this was an Israeli proposal. We have every expectation that if Hamas agrees to the proposal, that Israel would say yes. So Prime Minister Netanyahu's team, in fact, his foreign minister, again, just said that they welcomed this announcement by the president and that they did, in fact, agree that this was their proposal.
That is Admiral Kirby, who is whitewashing a proposal of a peace deal with Hamas. It is something Hamas is embracing. The Israelis are recoiling from. And Joe Biden needs. We'll discuss.
Number two.
The proceedings begin less than a year after a plea agreement fell apart that would have averted this trial. Hunter Biden has always been open about his battles with substance abuse. But this trial is going to put some graphic details out there in open court.
It is. And it's happening. How about the laptop? How about not paying your wife alimony? How about cheating on your wife with your deceased brother's spouse, the widow? How about not paying for child support from a kid you had out of wedlock and denied knowing? How about the laptop with all the crack pictures? All front and center if he goes through with this trial.
Number one.
Biden has chosen to make it political. The district attorney chose to make it political. And what's happening? What's happening is we've got an unbelievable United Party. $53 million came in the door.
It's up to 70. Ryan's Priebus, that was in the morning show on ABC. The verdict is in. So on what the impact of the Trump sentence on the race, and what are the chances he gets to go to jail in July, we have a large range of experts weighing in from all networks and across sections. Josh Krasauer joins us now from Fox News Radio, political analyst and editor-in-chief of Jewish Insider. Josh, your thoughts about the United Republican Party, no doubt, but about independents. Do we know yet how the verdict affects them?
Look, I think it's always risky to look at snap polls right after a big news event, because usually it takes time for people to process new information. And frankly, like a lot of the most newsworthy headlines the day or two after a big event end up kind of dissipating. Look, I think it's based on the snap polls, Trump lost a couple points in the national polls, but it's not a significant movement. I think that this is going to be an issue that's going to be litigated at the first big debate at the end of the month. And I think that's going to be sort of the big test for Trump, not so much the event itself, but how he talks about it, how he defends himself, and frankly, how Democrats utilize the conviction. I mean, I think you're seeing a growing comfort among Democratic candidates, including, we'll see about the White House, but calling Trump a convicted felon. That's sort of the line. That's the talking point that has been increasingly common among Democratic campaigns. And I think that's what Democrats, you know, politically speaking, at least got out of the verdict. They want to tag that descriptor to Donald Trump and hope it moves enough of the persuadable voters still out there in a very close election.
I mean, I know who you're talking about. Adam Schiff is the one who is urging the president to use it over and over again. He says, go ahead. Why not do it? And he weighed in yesterday. And here's what he had to say.
You know, I think for the president, there's a time and a place for each argument. I think on the day of the conviction, the day thereafter, I can understand the president staying above the fray and demonstrating his respect and expressing his respect for the jury system. But I think the president should be leaning into this going forward. His competitor is a convicted felon. And you can only imagine if the situation was reversed, they would be going after Joe Biden with a vengeance.
I'm not sure. President Trump did not go after anybody on the Democratic side legally, did not go after Hillary Clinton, even though she launched the whole dossier and everything else that came out after the Mueller report was complete. But one thing they are saying, Will Scharf went to bat for, is Biden's all over this. Listen to George Stephanopoulos, cut four.
The attorney general in Manhattan has nothing to do with the Department of Justice. Finally, what do you expect from the sentencing process?
I vehemently disagree that the district attorney in New York was not politically motivated here, and I vehemently disagree that President Biden and his political allies aren't up to their necks in this prosecution. I think the fact
there's
that
no
the
evidence
Biden
of that, sir. There's no. I'm not going to let you continue to say that. There's just zero evidence of that.
Well, how about the fact that Matthew Colangelo was standing over Alvin Bragg's shoulder when he announced this verdict? I mean, Colangelo was the number three official in the Biden Department of Justice who suddenly disappears and shows up as an assistant district attorney right as Trump's case in New York starts to proceed.
After the decision was made,
you want to talk about political coordination?
This has nothing to do. No, it's not. This has nothing to do with President Biden. Do you want to answer the question about the sentencing process or not?
And he went back and forth, and John Ratcliffe weighed in, too. And he says that there were meetings with Alvin Bragg and Jack Smith in the White House. So there's going to be a big push to link these two together in the 2022 article in Politico. At the time, I think you were Axios. And 2022, they said President Biden was getting upset that Attorney General Merrick Garland was taking so long to charge Trump.
Yeah, I mean, the charge of politicization is already going on in the Republican airwaves. There's a big ad in Montana in a big Senate race where Tim Sheehy, the Republican expected nominee, is attacking John Tester and not criticizing the politicization of the case. I mean, look, in terms of the court of public opinion, Brian, this was always the case that people weren't paying attention to. I mean, they were paying attention to the verdict, perhaps, but in terms of the day-to-day developments, most Americans were not really engaged. It's a case that was, you know, even a lot of liberal legal experts have always said was the shakiest. I think the remaining political question is kind of coming full circle. Does this put the notion of a conviction in the political oxygen to the point where people who just hear that word or hear convicted felon, does that move the needle at all going forward? I think it may slightly if you believe the snap polls, but I think the bigger test is going to happen on the campaign trail. It's going to be an ad. It's going to be at the debate that we see at the end of the month. So this is the argument we're going to be hearing throughout the month of June about, you know, the Republicans, like you said, are going to be arguing about this coordination, about politicization of law enforcement. And you're going to have Democrats just trying to kind of burnish their law and order credentials. But the interesting thing in New York is that, and this is something that Trump has said himself, is that, you know, they seem more aggressive in prosecuting this case than a lot of the more serious violent crime that takes place in the city on a daily basis.
So what are you hearing when it comes to sentencing? I want you to hear what Dan Abrams said on ABC, cut 18.
Anyone who tells you that, in all the other cases I've seen, there is no other case like this, all right? You can throw it all away. This is a unique case. The judge has complete and total discretion here as to what the sentence will be. It can be anything from nothing to 4 years in prison.
Community service.
Community service, it could be. It could be home confinement. There could be probation. I mean, but again, to sort of look to other cases to say, well, you know, in typical,
I completely agree with that.
And that is one thing is being very candid. We don't know. And we don't know if the prosecution's going to ask for jail time. And we don't know what the president's going to do with his interview process with the probation officer. He's not going to admit guilt. You know that.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, this is the drama, you know, in that month running up to the July 11th is the sentencing date. That's days before the Republican National Convention. It's a week or week or two after the first debate. I mean, this is going to be a seminal moment in our politics. Listening to the legal experts, most had said that this, as a first-time offender, this is the type of case that usually doesn't amount to jail time, but. You know, as we hear more about the politicization of you know, that's the argument that Trump and Republicans are making, as you hear Trump really, you know, testing the limits with his speech on Friday, going after, without mentioning by name, the judge, going after Michael Cohen, again, not by name, but, you know, he seems to be testing his limits. So he really is creating a sense of drama, really. And I think they're seems to be a shift in terms of the conventional wisdom that there actually could be some jail time as a result of this, but that's going to be up, you know, we'll find out in a month or so.
I don't know. Then just pulled him out of the campaign trail. You thought 6 weeks was bad when he gets to have Wednesday, Saturdays and Sundays off. Imagine if he's in jail just week after week and misses the RNC. Are you kidding me? Over a case that Cy Vance, his predecessor, wouldn't even have brought forward. The other story is Hunter Biden. In this case, here's what Senator Tom Cotton said. Cut 23.
Hunter Biden is guilty of so many crimes, he can barely even keep track of them, unlike Donald Trump, for whom they never even revealed the alleged crime that he supposedly tried to cover up.
So Hunter Biden's got a gun charge that he said he wasn't on drugs. He was, according to his own book and his own book on tape. And he's got on deck to testify against him, his former wife, his former girlfriend, who was Beau's wife, his former girlfriend he denied but has a kid with, go figure. So this could get really ugly for him quick, and the family.
It is quite a split screen. I mean, you have the Trump trial, the Trump verdict, and now the Hunter Biden trial taking place starting this week. And it gives the – we'll see what happens at the trial, but it gives the Trump campaign plenty of fodder to argue a double standard depending on how things transpire. And in a way, they're sort of similar – well, they're different cases, but in terms of just the – you know, they're basically, you know, kind of – little ticky-tack fouls that are being enforced pretty aggressively by law enforcement. Hunter thought he could kind of plea his way out of it. He wasn't able to in the end. This was a case that most legal experts in the Trump case that was seen as the most insignificant of the charges he's facing down the road. And yet he got sentenced, and it sounds like he could potentially face jail time. So the double standard is going to be the argument. You're going to be hearing it on and on from the Trump campaign and from Republicans. And I think, you know, look, you see in the public opinion, there is a growing sense that there is a creeping level of politicization in the justice system. And I think Trump will be channeling those concerns.
Right now, Josh, do you see any of the other three cases with closer that they're more likely than not to be brought up before the election?
I don't. I mean, it does look like the timetable. I mean, it was sort of in every one of the more serious cases, what I would call the more serious cases, the Mar-a-Lago documents, the January 6th case, the timetables have been pushed back for various reasons. It looks like we certainly won't get a verdict, I don't think, in any other case before the election.
All right. So that will decide it. Thanks so much, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. By the way, if you look at those snap hills he was talking about, do you think the verdict was correct or incorrect? 50% said correct. 25% said not correct. 23% did not know. A favorable opinion of Trump and Biden unchanged after and before the verdict. Do you think the charges against Donald Trump in this case were politically motivated? This is in a different poll, ABC poll. 47% said yes. 38% said no. So it was politically motivated. Do you think Trump should or should not end his presidential campaign? 49% say, yes, go end it. Yeah. The one thing I know for sure, that will not happen. That's positive. All right, we'll bring in the latest on Anthony Fauci's testimony. He put his glasses on. I don't know if now he suddenly realizes, well, he wants to know for sure who the Republicans and Democrats are. He's taking a little sip of water. We'll tell you what he said and how they tried to land a glove on him, which is not easy. Although I think that he has made so many mistakes, so much backtracking, so much unaccountability, so many unaccountable rules, never called out on it, making millions for speeches he has no business making. I think he's a disaster for the country. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Dr. Fauci, did you delete any emails or records related to the Wuhan lab or the origins of the virus?
No, I did not.
Okay. Dr. Morins said in a May 2021 email, he indicated that he was connecting people to you in a, quote, secret back channel. Do you know what he was referring to?
I don't have any idea what he's talking about. There is no back channel at NIAID.
Okay, there is. He also said in another email that there is no worry about Freedom of Information Act. I can send stuff to Tony on his private email. Did you communicate with anyone relating to anything regarding NIH or with Dr. Morins on a private email?
I do not do government business on my private email.
Okay, so have you communicated with Dr. Morins via private email, even if it was not necessarily your definition of government business?
It might have been because, as I mentioned in my opening statement, one of his functions is to write chapters, medical scientific chapters with me, so it is conceivable that I communicated with him on my private email when we were writing a chapter, and that was not official.
What about Peter Daszak?
No.
All right, so here we go again. His friend says they have a back channel. They talk about how they would avoid Freedom of Information Act. They work together all the time, but he has no idea what they're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. He never has any idea what anybody's talking about as it relates to things that he does not want to talk about. And when he starts filibustering about making money and not making money, it's maddening. But so far, I don't see, it's hard to tell because we're on the air. At the same time, I don't see much changing right now with Anthony Fauci. Republicans don't trust him. Democrats desperately protect him. John, you're in California. Hey, John. All right. We're going to hold off on the phones right now for a minute, and then we'll get back to it. But the thing that bothers me most about this whole pandemic investigation is that you have doctors here who come out and said and told us on this air, Dr. McCarthy, we don't know. You know, we don't know about this, about masks. I can't see it. I don't know where that came from. But the whole problem was it's not that they didn't know, it's that they didn't admit it. And with Anthony Fauci coming out saying, I don't know where the 6 feet came apart, and does now admit that there were deficits in learning with everybody that was forced to stay out of school, and then comes out and talks about getting the vaccine, but saying now, I'm not sure it was really necessary for young children to get the vaccine when the teachers were demanding the children get the vaccine because they were worried about getting sick because of the kids. So they kept the kids masked up. Nobody knew how to wear it. And then never coming out and saying, look, we found more research. Don't wear it outside. Whatever you do, don't wear the mask outside. Okay. That would have been fine. We just found, but instead, we are now releasing you from having to wear a mask. It's going to be solely your decision. Why would happen? We're just doing it. No idea, no consultations. But if you're not wearing the mask and people looked at you, they began to hate you. If you were not wearing a mask on the inside or getting up to go to the bathroom on the inside, people hate you. That's all because Anthony Fauci was doing this by decree. You agree with him, you're a Democrat, and you're a good person who cares, doesn't want to kill anyone. And if you want to live your life and have a degree of freedom and don't trust the academic, the medical opinions of Anthony Fauci and Peter Daszak and everybody else, then you need to be shadow banned. And he was working with the social media companies. His email revealed that. That's what's coming out today. I have no idea why these people aren't just as mad, Democrats aren't just as mad as Republicans, because this guy failed us in every way, in every way.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Christopher Rufo is a senior fellow at Manhattan Institute. He's a contributing editor of City Journal, and a key aide to Governor Ron DeSantis, and is always breaking story after story. When you find out what's happened with the curriculum in our schools, what's happened with transgender, what happened with these books that are in libraries that are inappropriate for kids. They like to say he's into banning books. He just wants appropriate books for ages and thought it was important for parents to know about it. Christopher, welcome back.
It's great to be with you.
First off, too, I just thank you again for Saturday night. You were on One Nation, did a great job, but also be able to expose to a lot of people. Little did we know over the weekend that Columbia would be back at it. And in case you don't know, Chris was able to do some research and find out where this whole pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist attitude came from at Columbia and other Ivies. And it came from their faculty, who's been hired over decades, to go ahead and spread this anti-American, anti-Western European, and anti-Semitic teachings at these elite institutions, Chris.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I would say that what we're seeing at Columbia was inevitable, given the catalyst of Hamas's brutal terror attack against Israel, which brought it to the surface in a very public way for the first time. But we have, you know, Columbia has spent now hundreds of millions of dollars advancing DEI ideology. This is explicitly anti-Western and is often anti-Semitic. The Heritage Foundation did a study and found that DEI directors at state universities, for example, frequently post content that could be deemed anti-Semitic and definitely post content that could be deemed anti-American. But it's also about Columbia's hiring of radical Islamist faculty members, in part using foreign funding that Columbia has tried to hide. A number of times in the last 20 years, Columbia has taken money from countries like Saudi Arabia, and other Gulf Arab, non-democratic states, and then tried to hide the source of that funding so they could hire some of these anti-Zionist faculty members. They now have dozens of these so-called anti-Zionist faculty members, and they're the ones that are really pushing this ideology on campus.
And it's worked. And when did it start, roughly?
It really started, ironically enough, in the early to mid-2000s. So around, first it started with Edward Said, decades ago. But these programs at Columbia really got built in the wake of the Iraq War. And of course, opinions differ on the Iraq War. I think it was a huge mistake. But it's very interesting that Columbia would start to hire some of these kind of post-colonial or decolonizing scholars. In the wake of that period, that was a fashionable cause on the left. And now they're finding out decades later, having built this massive faculty, having trained students in these ideologies, that actually they've come back the other way. This is a disaster for Columbia. The administration is really in rough shape. You've seen donations from alumni plummeting at all of these Ivy League universities. And this is really the consequences of their own actions dating back now more than 20 years.
And these knuckleheads out there with their nose rings and purple hair and their pup tents who are demanding three meals a day and Uber Eats, listen to some of their complaints.
Tell the planets in the middle of the ocean and sink it.
So that's genocide.
Oh, well.
Israel. Israel's a
I mean, this is some of the crap we've been listening to across the country, and now it makes sense to you. That's prompted you to go investigate this, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I will, think it's important to point out that there's actually some good news. There's a silver lining to some of these awful images we're seeing on television. And the silver lining is this, that the pro-Hamas protesters are deeply unpopular with the American people. And so there was some polling done recently that categorized institutions on a basis of popularity. The pro-Hamas campus protesters, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, these other elements have something like a 6% favorability rating in the United States. And so the vast majority of people who are watching do not like this. And so it's up to political leaders right now to take advantage of this opportunity. Tremendously unpopular campus protests, tremendously unpopular campus administrations. And political leaders need to point out that we are giving billions of dollars a year to these Ivy League universities, even though they're private institutions. This is a choice that's made by legislators and therefore made by voters. And it's a choice that we can undo tomorrow with sufficient political will. And so I'd like to see some political action on this front to say, you have absolutely a First Amendment right. If you want to be a pro-Hamas protester on campus, that's the speech that you want to deliver, you have a right to do so. You don't have a right to disrupt. You don't have a right to occupy. And you don't have an entitlement to public funds. I want to see people making this argument because it's something that we can do about it. People are not hopeless or helpless. We have the ability to take action.
Yeah, and by the way, over the weekend, on Alumni Weekend in Columbia, there was another encampment that propped up. The faculty tried to talk, some members of the faculty tried to talk to him and say, take this down, it's not good. And Saturday afternoon, the encampment consisted of about seven tents. The group fluctuated in size throughout the day, ranging from 25 to 60 people. Eventually, security brought them back up. I thought it was pretty ironic. They were talking about it on One Nation Saturday, and it's continuing, so they didn't learn that lesson. When I brought this up to Andy McCarthy and we were watching all the hellacious behavior at Harvard, at UCLA, at Stanford, this is what he told us. He said he was ahead of the game. He wrote a book about it.
The most important project that the Muslim Brotherhood has ever had in the United States was the Muslim Students Associations, which were begun with just really a handful of campuses in the Midwest in the 1960s. They have grown in the ensuing 60 years to the point where they have multiple chapters on almost every United States and Canadian college campus. And they are, they're basically a factory for Sharia supremacist and anti-Semitic literature. I mean, that's basically what it's all about. So they've been spewing this stuff out for three generations.
And he says he couldn't really get anybody's attention. I think now he got their attention. The other thing that Trump talked about doing is taxing the endowment and letting people know that things are going to change and then making them be transparent about who's giving them money.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, I've been working with the Congressional Committee and persuading, trying to persuade congressional staff to immediately demand by force of subpoena all of the foreign funding over the last two decades from all of the Ivy League universities to find out exactly who's giving them money, exactly what conditions that it comes with, and exactly what is funding some of these activities and some of the supposed scholarship on campus. But while I think it's an attractive rhetorical line to say tax the endowments, there's a much simpler thing is defund the existing money that we're already giving them. It's very difficult to institute new taxes. You're going to get resistance from Democrats. You're going to get resistance from Republicans. But even if you are a kind of traditional establishment, small government conservative, there's an argument to say, hey, look, Harvard has $50 billion in its endowment. Why are we giving them $800 million, $900 million, $1 billion a year in taxpayer subsidies? We should terminate that funding immediately. We should put conditions on that funding at the very least. And to say that American taxpayer money is not going to pass through the House of Representatives, which is controlled by Republicans, if it's going to be supporting these radical left-wing ideologies.
Well, I just want to tell you also, over the weekend, Donald Trump talked to Fox and Friends Weekend, and he said one of the departments he would like to get rid of is Department of Education. Could that work?
Of course it could work. It would take an effort. Republicans have been promising to abolish the Department of Education since it was established, half a century, approximately half a century ago. And so it is a rhetorical line that's used on campaigns. But the question is the public ready for significant institutional reform? In the past, the answer was no. Currently, I think the answer might be yes. And certainly, President Trump is one of the only people who is bold enough, who is courageous enough, who is frankly crazy enough to do something like that and actually make it a reality. And so I think it's time to absolutely push that. And I think that given what has happened the last 4 years since COVID, since critical race theory, since trans in schools, since all of these disasters in American education have become public, we know that approximately 5,000 people in the Department of Education are certainly up to no good. We should send them home. We should get the pink slips ready because, absolutely, I think that it's time for the Department of Education to go.
Because you believe even if you put your person at the top, it's still rotten at the core.
Yeah, and the problem is that there are, 5,000 people who work there. They're committed left-wing ideologues. If you look at the political donations, they're almost virtually 100% of the employees at the Department of Education give to Democrats, left-wing candidates. You can take over the top slots in the management and the upper management, but you can't overturn the institution as a whole. And so when I've spoken with former cabinet secretaries, conservatives, Republicans, they say, you know, very honestly, that the permanent staff will tell them, you're going to be gone in 4 or 8 years. I'm going to be here for 30 years. I'm going to retire here. I'm having a pension here. I just have to outlast you. I have to outmaneuver you. I have to delay you. I have to obfuscate. The permanent bureaucracy knows that it's in control and knows that most Republicans are not smart or sophisticated enough to get around it and to replace them. And so I think that the simplest, cleanest, and most effective solution for many of these cabinet positions and departments is simply to terminate funding in the budget and have the president wind them down immediately. Look, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, and you've probably noticed this too, is, you know, we have that government shutdowns where only the essential services are funded.
Yeah.
I think most people think, hey, wait a minute, life has not changed. Let's just have the essential functions and get rid of the non-essential functions altogether.
I know. This has got to be a total audit. We have to reconfigure our spending without people looking at it as an attack on the disabled, attack on the elderly, attack on the chronically ill. There's just got to be a way to attack spending and make it smarter, let alone some of the tough decisions that have to be made while increasing our defense. Because this suddenly we're paying more in interest, as they predicted, we're paying more in interest than we are for our entire Defense Department. It is a bad cycle. Lastly, Chris, from when you talk to Governor DeSantis, do you sense that he's going to go hard for Trump and go to bat for him?
Yeah, of course. And I think that Governor DeSantis, above all, is a kind of ruthlessly efficient, effective, and pragmatic leader. He knows how to wield power. He knows when to fight, when to step back. And I think that he knows that this is a critical election. And I think he's also mature enough to put aside any personal feelings he might have had from the primary campaign and saying, hey, look, we have one shot. Of course, DeSantis wanted to win. The people selected Trump. It's time for Trump. And I really think that DeSantis, if he can step up, if he can help Trump win, I think he's the natural successor, much like Richard Nixon, you know, lost a primary election or lost a presidential election, much like Ronald Reagan lost a Republican primary election. There's a lot of room left for DeSantis in his political career. He's still very young. And I think the wise move for him, and I'm sure he'll take it because he's a wise leader, is to go all out in support of President Trump because this is a crucial election.
I agree. He's got great instincts, extremely bright as type of person as you want, leading a state, leading a country. Christopher Rufo, thanks so much. Always appreciate your hard work.
Thank you.
All right. That was Christopher Rufo. That was great. When we come back, we'll give you the latest on the Fauci hearings. He's going at it right now with Congressman Cloud. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
The one thing that I love that she's bringing to her sport, more people want to watch. Don't get it twisted. Caitlin Clark is the reason why a lot of great things is going to happen for the WNBA. You know, but I'm rooting for Caitlin because I've been in that seat before. I've walked that road before. You know, I'm just kind of in this mode right now because I'm getting the same thing from watching my son, who's a 19-year-old, kind of getting a lot of animosity and hatred towards him when he's just a kid trying to live out his dream. You know, there's a very small number of men and women that actually get to live out their dream of playing the professional sport. And we have grown-ass men and women out here doing whatever they can to try to make sure that does not happen. That is the weirdest thing in the world, but it is what it is. And I'm glad that Caitlin has a great head on her shoulder.
That's good that LeBron James not talking about race for a change when it comes to that. And Caitlin, in case you don't know, Caitlin Clark has been knocked around, highly scrutinized, not protected by her teammates and targeted by opponents, but that's a little like sports. It's very much like the military. You got to earn your keep. The reputation doesn't get you anything. Let's see what you got. And then if you rise up, you're there for good. LeBron James, I was reminded, was the guy who was on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16 years old. By the time he got to the NBA at 18 years old, everybody was targeting him. And I did not know this, not living in Cleveland, or maybe it's Dayton, Ohio. WHIO listeners would know this. but they really targeted him. His teammates didn't accept him. They didn't like all the attention he got in the beginning, and they kept saying, well, he didn't win the championship. Magic Johnson, same thing. Highly hyped when he got there, big smile when he arrived there, but they had established stars when he was there, and that's just the way it's always worked. But I like the attention the league is getting. Anybody, I'm all for women's sports, but if I was to urge anybody to do anything, if they say they want to support sports, watch it, especially if you're women. You have to watch. No one has to tell kids if they're into sports to watch baseball, football, basketball, hockey, or soccer, depending on what you like. But for some reason, when women go to watch sports, they watch the men. There's plenty of options. When it comes to baseball, there's softball. When it comes to basketball, you got a professional league. And when it comes to football, guess what's emerging? Flag football is emerging big time, and it's huge. I think it's going to be a college sport soon. And it's so good for the sport because the sport is kind of hard to watch in the beginning because you say, well, why are these guys doing this? And what's a holding penalty? And why is that? What's encroachment? Whatever it is. But when you play it, you just absorb it. I mean, a little with soccer, one of the simplest games around. You could spend offside. You could spend 5 days straight explaining to someone what offside is and not be effective. So we'll see. Anthony Fauci continued to parrying, trying to push back on all those people that said he didn't do a good job with the pandemic, how much money he made. He said he made no money off it. Let's see if that stands up to scrutiny. Don't forget, I'm going to be on Gutfeld tonight, so watch at 10 o'clock. I don't know why I do that show. I'm going to reevaluate myself afterwards. But also, if you want to see me on stage, and I know you do, coming up in Indianapolis, Indiana, History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour, people do drive a long way to go. Shelton Auditorium, 1000 West 42nd Street. Go to briankilmeade.com. July 27th, Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. Same tour, 524 Main Street, over at the Sherman Theater. And every show is a little bit different, and we're going to do some changes. One thing I have to take out, Allison, that part in the tape where it talks about Florida-Georgia line.
Well, because it highlights how you got them together, but right now they're sort of apart.
Right. And I think we're going to be interviewing Tyler Hubbard here. I'll bring it to this show, but maybe do something for One Nation. And I'm thinking to myself, why don't we just try Brian Kelly? Now, with one of them, they said, don't bring up the breakup. Mm-hmm. How could you not?
I know.
But I mean, Sonny and Cher break up. They still perform together. They're not married, but you got to talk. Hey, what happened with you guys?
Do you think you'll be able to bring them back together?
That'll be my greatest question.
That's your goal.
Yes. I have a few more people to bring back together, but I'll start with, if I can get Florida Georgia Line, then I'll work on the Nation.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.